Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Remap interview. I'm recording this in the beginning of December. I don't know when this is going to go on the website, but I just knew that when I saw this tweet, I wanted to get this person on the phone, on the... That's a phrase. I guess it's not really accurate these days. But anyway, I'm getting lost in the weeds. So I can get lost in the weeds with Alex Donaldson, who is a video game critic, owner of RPG Site, and assistant editor over at VG247, and a freelancing all around the internet. The reason you might be wondering, I'm sort of like hearing that name in the back of my head. Well, back before I lost my job at Vice and Waypoint, I wrote a series of articles kind of trying to understand and really to explain to a broader audience that so many video game websites that you like and enjoy, if you're not paying for them, if you're not like at Remap, where like we rely on subscriptions to make all of this work, most websites cannot or are unable to do that, and they rely on ads, and they have guides. And guides, walkthroughs, however you want to characterize them, are essentially the foundational element financially for how many websites work. And I had a chance to chat with Alex for those articles about a year and change ago, and I wanted to get on and talk to Alex today about something they tweeted, and we'll get to that in a moment. But hello, Alex. Thanks for coming through Remap.
Hello, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's exciting, and it's an
interesting
time.
Perhaps exciting isn't the right word.
Perhaps exciting. I mean, it's exciting in a chaos is exciting sort of way. But yeah,
I like that you're despite the bleakest places appears to be going, that you are maintaining your sense of optimism. I appreciate that because we need folks like yourself trying to find a way through it. Because I think it's a lot of jobs are on the line in the future if we don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll kind of talk through a bunch of this history. Where I wanted to start was why I reached out in the first place was a quote tweet that you had to somebody in which you said, "The funniest thing about this extremely grim and fucked up development is how Google's AI answer is probably more concise, clear, and useful to the user than a lot of websites, because they have to be more wordy and pad some in order to rank and fulfill SEO requirements for Google." Now, this quote retweet was on top of essentially Google rolling out a sort of saved you a click feature in which they are using AI to aggregate guides and walkthroughs to answer basic questions that a player might have. I believe in this example, it was cyberpunk,
and it was a basic question of like early on in Cyberpunk, right? There's the choice in the prologue where you can side with Dexter, the big black Jesus of the afterlife, as they call him, or you can side with Evelyn, who's the girl who's setting up the heist from the bar with Judy. And so the example was basically someone Googling, who should I choose, Dexter or Evelyn, which I think is quite a common sort of search term. And instead of giving you results where you click through to a website, Google's generative AI has read a bunch of websites. So they actually cite a website that I can't identify. It might be Game Revolution. They cite the Steam guides, which obviously a user created on Steam. And then they've got Games Radar. Obviously, that's Future Publishing. And so they've sort of scraped those three pages and used that to aggregate and come up with an answer that is then written by an AI. And that appears on the search page. So if you want the answer to that question, you don't have to click through. And the guy I was quote retweeting was is the editor and I think the owner of Tech Raptor, which is another game sort of another website that trades heavily on most of them trade heavily on the guides aspect. And so he was saying, in no uncertain terms, this is horrific because basically it scrapes the work and presents it, and there's no need for anyone to click through. And if people don't click through, no one's making any, well, Google's making money, but
someone's making money. Always making money. Yeah, it's a matter of where that gets dumped off.
And this generative AI stuff, this isn't just about websites. Like, this can scrape from, you know, YouTube videos. It can use the YouTube auto transcription stuff and scrape instructions from something like that. So it covers everything. And Google basically is trying to find ways of stopping you from leaving Google. But I think the thing that I found interesting, which was sort of the crux of my quote tweet, is that Google is solving a problem that it created because Google made the internet worse in some ways. In some ways, it's made
it better before. It made it better initially, conceptually. And then as it became a business and as it became a global product and as it became essentially a titan of the internet, it made itself worse in the process of extracting more and more revenue capital from that enterprise. Like, the original Google search was a revelation. It changed how you use it's very I guess you can't even take it for granted anymore because now Google search is such trash that you can't even appreciate what it was doing well in the first place. But you know, you and I are probably roughly similar ages. Like, I grew up in the age of web crawler and all of these
Web rings.
Like competing search engines that sometimes you used for different reasons because that search engine was better at this than another, but there was no, you were just sort of like throwing your hands in the air, like which one you use. And then Google came along and I was like, oh, the rest of these are fucking terrible. Like, I'm never using any of this again.
Well, but this is the crazy thing, right? Like, you can't put all the blame at the door of Google in one sense because it's human nature. So what has really happened is Google obviously had crawlers that determined what was on a page and how useful that information was and all that sort of stuff. And people get used to gaming that system in order to get themselves high up in the rankings. And so Google changes the requirements. And what has happened over time is a creep of bullshit, basically, where pages have to be. So if you search something and you land on a guide and you get a guide where it's like, I'm trying to think of a really simple search term, like GTA 6 trailer release time, right? And you go to the page and instead of just saying the GTA 6 trailer release time is the 5th of December at this time, it says, you might be wondering what time the GTA 6 trailer is going to be released. On this page, we're going to tell you, and it will go on and on and on for 300 words. And the reason for that is Google has sort of created an ecosystem where the crawlers see that, generally speaking, as a positive.
Because it's content, right? Like, it's the difference between just like putting up a page with a trailer date and nothing else and running an ad on it versus, hey, like, if there's 300 words here and there's paragraph breaks, well, that means there's context. That means that when someone clicks here, they're getting something of value beyond just the answer itself.
Yeah, and this is also where things like you get websites put up pages, and I'm not, you know, I pass no judgment on any of this. Some of it I do, but on this particular activity, I don't. But you get websites doing things like having a page that is GTA 6 review, and when you click to it, it's just a list of, you know, everything we know about GTA 6 or whatever. Here's all the trailers. Here's the names of the characters. It's actually quite an interesting and useful page because it's sort of all this information in one place. But the reason that page exists so far in advance of anyone seeing review code is to sort of squat that search term. Mm-hmm. And then when you get your actual review, you take that stuff away and you put the actual review in. And all this sort of stuff has contributed to in my opinion, making the internet worse. I mean, you mentioned, you said we're roughly similar ages. I mean, yeah, for me, we talked about this a bit when we talked about RPGs. Like, that's my website, my baby. That comes from, and I come from, and my business partner, Mike. Mike and I met on Final Fantasy message boards when he was like 13 and I was 11 and or 10 probably. And
there's gotta be a way to save her. I'm just gonna search enough message boards and there'll be some theory crafting and I'm gonna save that girl. Like, like that's, well, this, I mean, like, I've met so many people over those sorts of conspiracy theories in the 90s.
This is absolutely, dude, I absolutely wrote pages that were about what is this cave that you can't access and all that. And it's always really funny because now all these years on in this job, it's actually fun to, when Final Fantasy VII turned 25, I sat down with Katase-san, who directed the original game, and I just peppered him for the anniversary of all these deep cut fan questions. And he was like, what the hell are you going on about? But anyway, and that's really fun to do that. But my point is, I come from that internet, from that sort of fan site age. And we set up a Final Fantasy website in the year 2000. And that was, so around Final Fantasy IX time. And that was absolutely driven by the more traditional style of video game guide, where it was comprehensive and it was more like a physical guidebook, like a Prima or a Piggyback book that you would go and buy from GameStop.
And the longer, the better. I'm like, I used, when I would go to GameFAQs when I was a kid, I sorted not by, well, I don't know what kind of rating systems they have, but it's basically like the higher the kilobytes, like the better the guide, like IMO. Yeah. It's like if this one is a bigger size, if I'm going to have to use an entire, like, everything in the library to print this out before they figure out that I'm printing 350 pages for this role-playing game walkthrough, that, like, that's the era that we're talking about.
But that is what's changed, right? In the sense that now the money isn't really generally in writing those big comprehensive guides. It's in, Google actually has a tool called Google Trends, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but listeners may not have ever heard of it, where it's literally a place you can go and you can look at what people are searching for in a specific topic. So you can go in and punch in Final Fantasy 16 and see what things are popping off as the most popular terms. And so the very basic basement level entry to this SEO thing is to go to Google Trends for the game you're going to target. You put in the name of the game, you see what people have been searching for, and you can obviously separate it by country and stuff like that. And then you write pages targeting that thing. So if ever you, if you're the sort of person who subscribes to a lot of RSS feeds, you know, that's still a thing for some people, or you follow a lot of games outlets.
I don't, please.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, good. Yeah, no, don't worry. You don't have to consider yourself a degenerate for still doing RSS feeds. I never gave up. I went straight from Google Reader shutting down to Feedly was like one of the popular ones afterwards. And then I actually just converted to a different one because a friend was like, you know, they're like, there are like better, more feature rich RSS. And it's like, there are. And so then I ended up, I think Inno Reader, I think, is the one that I switched to.
But this is the thing, right? If you see on your RSS that seven different game sites have all done like the same really specific guide within the last 48 hours, that's why. And so Google's created the internet where it's more about, in fact, much like everything in this day and age, it's all about the immediacy. It's not about, here's a beautiful handcrafted simple short guide, long form guide rather. It's more about, here is an answer to a question that when you're sitting on your sofa playing Cyberpunk or playing Final Fantasy 16 or playing whatever, you whip out your phone and you Google that question, you click the top link or the second link or the third link, because that's the other thing. It's all about being in the top three. If you're not in the if you're not in the top three, it's almost pointless. And someone lands on your page, reads your guide, and you get a bit of money from the ads. But Google now is saying, all these pages are terrible. or they, not necessarily they're feeling that they're all terrible, but they're feeling, and I, you know, you see this complaint a lot. You see it on Twitter, you see it on places like Reset Era, people saying, I can't get the information I want because it's surrounded by other stuff. I think the classic example outside of games is the recipe website, right? Where you search for a recipe and you have to scroll through loads of bullshit before you even get to the ingredients list.
Well, it's why I think this is very familiar for not just video game answers, but just answering, like, this is part of like the rot of the internet that Google contributed to, where how often do you like Google something for an, like, you put it in a question format, and then instead of wanting to click on any of those websites, you just scroll far enough to get the Reddit answers where somebody like has asked that same question, and then the comment underneath is the answer, or what's happened increasingly because of like the shit show at Reddit from earlier this year, last year, their big struggle over their API yeah. charging. A lot of people deleted their accounts in protest. And so I keep going back to like, sometimes I find the topic with the answer, like the question that I want. It's like, where's that answer? User deleted their account. Like, son of a bitch. But the only yeah. reason Reddit is becoming like a Q&A resource is because like searching through Google itself has become so monstrous because the websites on there are like stuffing themselves with ads to be in that. I mean, it's all like intertangled where everyone has made everything worse collectively while chasing whatever like Google says is like, oh no, this is actually what, today. This is what we decided is the optimum way to do this.
And there's SEOs as well, right? So, and some of them are good and some of them are bad. Some of them are real snake oil salesmen. Some of them are excellent. I have to give a shout out here to Lily Ray. If you search that name on Twitter, she'll come mm-hmm. up straight away. She's just an excellent SEO. I've never like worked directly with her, but she's mm-hmm. one of the few people that I follow her on social. And when she says things, I listen because she's real about this stuff. She works for AmCiv, which is a big company that does SEO and a lot of other reputational management stuff. And she said in a tweet the other day, like, oftentimes for people with SEO, it's actually not a strategy, it's a loophole. You look for the loophole in Google's system to get to the top of Google, and you exploit it until the loophole is closed. And mm-hmm. then when it closes, you panic because your source of income has disappeared overnight. And this isn't everybody doing this, but that's sort of the worst of the internet. And I think that's where Google's coming from with this AI stuff. But obviously this becomes this horrible Ouroboros of Google is stealing content. And well, not, that's an unfair way of characterizing it. They would say, they wouldn't say they're stealing content. They would say they're using the AI scraper to create a version, to create a short succinct answer.
Well, whatever. But it's the same. Fundamentally, all I can think about when looking at this problem is it's very similar to the problem the media had 15 years ago with mm-hmm. the rise of Facebook and yeah. other like social networks, including news, in which what happened was, the promise from places like Facebook and other social networks were like, hey, we're going to use your articles. We're going to aggregate your data. And what you're going to get out of that is, well, no money from us directly, but like you're going to get traffic, which is going to lead to money. And this like symbiotic relationship, we keep people on the platform, but enough people are going to click through that it's going to work out for everybody. And like, it's not a spoiler to say like it didn't work out for the media. Like tens of thousands of people lost their jobs on that false promise. It got even worse when they did their like pivot to video nonsense.
Oh, which, well, like, I mean, everybody got screwed there.
But what I mean by that is like, I understand like what you're getting at, which like from Google's perspective, like, well, they're using existing data to solve a tangible problem for people, but at the expense of the business models that they helped create in order for people to pay their jobs, like put food on the table.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been, it is one thing if this was rolled out and they said, hey, so internet's kind of messy right now. We think these AI tools can maybe help clean it up, make things more effective. We understand that the only reason these AI tools work is because of the underlying content underneath. It can't invent itself. At least not yet. It can't play a game by itself and create a guide. I feel like, you know, maybe 20 years from now, who knows? But hey, if we scrape your data, you are, in the same way that you can get like, you know, pennies from an ad, from a click through, you're getting money as we use your data. And that never happened with Facebook and other social networks when they were using media as like proprietary content. And so far, there's none of that here, because I think that would make it much more palatable. It's like, look, maybe we get to click through to an ad, but also Google's giving us money if like they know if they're scraping the data, like they have the information there. And it's very easy for them, if they wanted to set up an exchange where websites got, you know, probably not much money, but something for being applicable to that answer.
Yeah. And I mean, but it's dangerous anyway, I think, because it's like we talk about the Facebook thing. What was that Facebook thing the birth of, really? It was the birth of clickbait in the modern sense. It was the birth of one quick trick to do this, you won't yeah. believe, you know, whatever, whatever. Those sorts of articles come about, those sort of headlines come about because they get clicked through on Facebook. And I think the danger is if you do that and you make it a revenue model where you get paid if your AI gets scraped, the danger is you end up with people then who are actually not writing for users. They're writing for the AI. And so this is the challenge. But if they leave it as it is and they say, well, we don't want to bias it by incentivizing it, what are you going to do when all the websites that you're scraping from essentially shut down and stop producing content because they're not making money anymore because you're no longer sending clicks to them? And obviously, this is a complicated equation even for Google because they have such a stranglehold grip on the internet advertising world as well. Mm-hmm. Lack of clicks going through to websites technically is probably hurting their bottom line to some degree in that sense also. So it's sort of a slippery slope, and it's like that tweet is just about the AI thing. But when it comes to this search apocalypse that feels like we're on the verge of entering, it's about a lot of different things. Because obviously that's one bad actor use of AI in a sense, being used by a giant corporation. But the other bad actor use is, and we've seen a lot of this on like with YouTube scripts, you know, this may date this video, but as we record this, like the YouTuber H-Bomber Guy has released an incredible 3-hour video about plagiarism on YouTube. And something he touches on in that is plagiarists using AI to flip a script. So putting an original script from channel A into an AI and saying, can you rewrite this so it still makes sense, but it's different? And then they use that as their script for their channel. And in the world of games media, not just guides, in everything, in fact, but obviously if you've got a nice deep dive, you know, feature, that's very difficult to copy. But if you're just, you know, you're telling someone how to get the best weapon, or, you know, you've got the social link answers for Persona or whatever, that can very easily be flipped in that way. That's why on RPG site, we're huge on paper towns, because I can't really do anything about it, but I just get a slight sadistic pleasure out of catching people doing it, to be honest.
Do you want to explain? We've talked about this concept before, but do you want to explain what that means and, and sort of how you conceive of implementing these kind of trapdoors in
copy? Yeah, so a paper town, the term paper town comes from map making back in like medieval times, I think, where literally map makers would put towns on maps that didn't exist. And so if another map maker came out with a map that had that exact town on it in that exact spot, they would know that they had been plagiarized because that town doesn't exist. So in a video game guide sense, it's a difficult road to tread, because what you don't want to do is put in information that could mislead people. But say you have a guide that's about the best weapon in a game, what you can do is sort of misname a location in a really obvious way where someone reading it is going to be like, that's a weird typo, but they know where you're talking about. Or the name of a weapon, or the name of a character, or something like that. But then if you see that reproduced on X websites 48 hours after you put it live, you know that they've just scraped you, or that, not necessarily scraped in the AI sense, although that's becoming a thing, but this has been a problem for years. And before it was just like guys, you know, poor underpaid writers who are being forced to do huge amounts of work by content farms, where they're expected to get so many guides up, it's impossible for them to actually play the games and stuff. So they're taking their screenshots from YouTube videos, from Let's Plays, and they're just rewriting content they see on other websites. So I put in paper towns, but that's just, like I say, it doesn't actually do anything. On a couple. Because
then
of
you need, like, you know, I think in some of the articles I wrote about it, I spoke, like on background with some folks that work for, like, let's call them like very big websites, right? In which there's, you know, like you can take some swings at like who you think that might be. Who could afford to have a lawyer that, you know what I mean? It's one thing to put in the catch, right? Where like it's the bait, and then you can, you know, you have the paper town, you can catch that someone is plagiarized. It's pretty clear cut. But then it's the ability to do the follow through, like, really only exists on certain scale. I mean, you can shame people, but, you know.
Usually it's just a polite email to an editor that you know, saying, look, I just want you to know this has been robbed from us. And on occasions I've had that conversation with editors, and the editor comes back and says, I'm really sorry, we've given you a link, or I'm really sorry, we've taken it down, which,
yeah,
a backlink's a backlink, right? But yeah, it all folds into, you've got that, you've got the Google Discover stuff that's going on right now. So I don't know if you have followed that at all.
No, what's that?
Google Discover is, if you've got an Android phone, if you've got a Google Pixel, for instance, and you're on your home screen and you swipe right, so you swipe towards the right to move the screen left. You know what I mean?
It brings up
a series of stories.
Oh, this is all this like gross. Sorry, continue. And I've got a story related to it. Finish your point.
Well, yeah, basically, it's stories that it thinks you'll be interested in. But Discover has become a enormous source of traffic for a lot of websites. And Google deployed a bunch of changes to Discover. They had a big thing that they called the helpful content update. And that's why there's so much noise right now around this SEO stuff, because the helpful content update was sort of in October and November. And some websites have been decimated. Again, this to come back to, I gave a shout out to Lily Ray earlier, when this was all going on, she was taking sort of getting people to send her their case examples. And there were people who had gone from getting 1 million clicks a month through Discover to literally zero overnight, like a switch had been flipped. Now, the question is that bad content? Is it good content? I think in a lot of cases, it was okay content that sort of has been tarred with the wrong brush, so to speak. But so there's changes in Google Discover, and Discover's weird anyway, because it is that thing of it's Google watching you. It's looking at what you're searching. I'm sure you find being in this job, you might be Googling a lot on a specific topic because you're doing research for an article or something. And then you wake up, open your phone, and Discover is full of that topic, and it feels a bit gross.
Yeah, it's like a combination between my kids searching things on YouTube and then me doing research. It's like I'm getting like strange Christmas videos and then also like a bunch of alt-right like figures. And it's like, how do I just delete this algorithm and start over? Because it is not actually helping me accomplish anything. I think it's Google Discovery, where like I had a neighbor, he got a Google Pixel, and then he kept, in conversation, he would like kind of bring something up, and I'm like, I don't think that's like true. Be like about an upcoming movie or something, and then eventually we pieced together that he was getting this by being like bored on his phone and like using it as a conversation topic. It's discovering he was being like wildly misled on these articles. He's like, I gotta stop looking at this crap.
Yeah, because these websites, it's much the same way there was Facebook bait. A lot of people now are doing Discover bait, and so. So Discover's a big element of it because, like I say, people have had huge traffic changes for good or for ill in Discover. I'm sort of the opinion that Google's heart is in the right place. Although, you know, this is a company that famously apparently had the motto, don't be evil, and then later got rid of that motto. But I do think their heart is in the right place, and they understand that elements of the internet are super grim and not working very well. And so I think, like, strictly speaking, in the video game space, for instance, I feel like the helpful content update did hit the sort of websites harder that were inclined to do sort of nonsense SEO pages. So let's a page like Final Fantasy 17 release date. I haven't looked at that, but I guarantee you can Google that and there will be people who have that, even though that is a game that ostensibly does not exist. Definitely doesn't have a release date. It will at some point, but that's sort of camping on, and it's just nonsense in my opinion. And I feel like that's the sort of stuff they're actually targeting. And I feel like a lot of websites that do stuff like that have been hurt by the helpful content update, because what they're saying is that content is not helpful. The page doesn't even answer the question that you're posing. It's just there to suck up the traffic from completely oblivious people who don't follow game news, who finish Final Fantasy 16 and go, that was quite good, and Google Final Fantasy 17. That's it. And so there's that, but there's a lot of crossfire in it. There's a lot of innocent people being caught up, a lot of innocent websites being caught up in it, a lot of great writers. And yeah, the danger is that an inability to have any steady level of traffic combines with a hugely unstable ad market, because the ad market is all over the shop and has been pretty much all year. And obviously that's influenced by all sorts of things. Like, I can only speak for RPG site, but we had like an advertising average drop that was relatively severe in October, to the point where I emailed the publisher who does our ads, and I was like, what's going on? And they were just like, it's the war, because advertisers are just like, they don't know what content they're necessarily going to be opposite. There's not that much nuance in the ad market unless you're a huge website that has its own add teams in the way like, you know, an IGN does or whatever. And so you just saw a drop, and then it gradually recovered as grim as it is, as the world began to just go back to normal and forget that this horrible stuff was happening. And so you, those things combine, and the ad market has been really, really unstable for quite a few years now, really. It was a big boom during COVID and everyone was printing money, especially in games. Everyone was doing Animal Crossing guides and
Animal Crossing and Elden Ring paid a lot of people's bills.
Yeah. And, but since then it's sort of been a bit more wobbly, and that combined with the Google thing, it's two elements of uncertainty where for games media specifically, it's been a hard year. I think, like, I speak to a lot of independent, you know, website owners, because the safety in numbers, right? So if you run a website like RPG Site, the easiest thing to do is to chat to people who have similar sites of similar sizes, compare notes, make sure you're not getting screwed on Google position, or, you know, it helps you to identify a problem. Like, if you realize your search positions are dropping significantly and everyone else's aren't, you go, we've got to look at this. And that's the crazy thing, right? It's like, this job should really be, really, it should be about writing about video games, spreading the joy of video games, and, you know, attacking the bad of video games, the problems in development, all that sort of stuff, you know, equality issues. There's a lot of stuff we've got to deal with as an industry, and it should be about that. But for someone like me on the site owner level, a lot of my time is spent looking at tools that just tell me literally two times a day how our search positions have moved for key terms. Twice a day, I get an email from a tool that literally goes, on Cyberpunk 2077 cars or best cars, you've dropped four places. And then I have to go to someone and say, is there anything we can do to this page to sort of pep it up a bit? Now, we're quite snooty on RPG Site. I don't deny that, in the sense that there's a lot of stuff that we won't do. There's a lot of stuff. The guys are pretty good at keeping me in check, where sometimes I ask people to do things and they go, don't want to do that, man. I go, you're probably right, actually, just leave it. And the truth is, probably I could be far richer and far better off if I was willing to just, be completely unscrupulous about it and just go for it, and, you know, could have made hay while the sun shined during lockdown and stuff like that. But that's actually the interesting thing from my perspective. Like, when you said at the start, oh, you've got quite a good attitude about it, that's because the truth is, the last 3-4 months haven't been that bad for us, because we won't run the sort of website where we're not doing a lot of the stuff that is really unstable. We try to provide really useful guides. We try not to answer silly, simple questions, you know, because how to jump, how to save, you know, we trust our readers to, and also having a more niche website, we naturally have quite an engaged default direct audience who are here to follow us, much the same way you guys do. Not on the same scale as you guys, I'm sure, but like, we've got an audience who are coming to our website for us, who listen to our podcast and stuff like that. So that helps. But I think there's so many sites that are just entirely built on the search empire. And I think what this year in particular has proved, for a combination of Google being quite aggressive in the moves it's made and the AI stuff, is that that is a house of cards. It's that simple.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told. so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Where do you, I mean, obviously, like, this stuff seems to be moving so fast that it's hard to tell where it's all going to end up. But where do you see, you know, you've done this long enough to see different evolutions of the ad market, how you construct websites, how you construct guides, like how you manage to keep a site like RPG site around for like literal decades. Like, where do you, what are you doing? Like, what are others doing? I don't know, 5, 10 years from now, where do you think this is headed?
I mean, my hope is that we will be doing the same thing. We have ideas of things we're going to do and things we're going to change. And, you know, actually one thing that's quite exciting is I'm currently working on a new website, which is something a bit different, which is with, I don't know if I'm cool to say, so I won't say a name, but just with someone who's been a gaming internet personality, who took a step back and is thinking about what their next move is going to be. And so you think about stuff like that for the future. For a website like RPG Site, my mantra all the way back to 2006 when we set the site up was, smaller is better. I think when it comes to media empires, I actually think you're sort of better off having a lot of small ships rather than one big unsinkable, or so to speak, unsinkable ship, because I think this isn't, you know, there are some places that are too big to fail. IGN isn't going anywhere, right? But I think having a niche and owning that niche is going to be more important going forward. And I think this is where Google's got a thing they talk about, which is EEAT, which is expertise, experience, expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. And this is something where they are driving that hard from an SEO standpoint. And so that's things like they want to know what your website's about, what it does, why it's good at what it does, why it's authoritative about what it does. Also about authors too. So like things like author bios are more important than ever, which is nuts because it's like they're building weird databases on people who write stuff online in that sense. You know, if you Google your name now, if you've got that EEAT presence, it will bring up a bunch of stuff that Google's put together on you. Which is fine. It's public information, but it's interesting. So I think having a niche fits into that EEAT thing where, you know, a website like RPG Site, yeah, we are going to be experienced in the RPG genre. We are going to be experts on various aspects of that genre. We are going to be authoritative. And we try to do that in the sense of, like, when it comes to the guides, for instance, it goes into features, it goes into reviews. One thing I really love about our site that I haven't had, I've worked in a lot of places in the games media. I've freelanced in a lot of places, UK magazines, UK websites. I've done stuff for the BBC, all sorts. But one thing I've always loved on RPGs, we have people who look forward specifically to our reviews because they know you guys are all super hardcore nerds for this stuff. And so am I. So you are going to speak to me, which is always the best way to look at reviews, right? You find someone who you think is going to line up with you, and then you know their judgment probably isn't going to be too far from yours. And that's always interesting for us with a game like Final Fantasy 16, which is like quite a good game, but in my opinion, not a very good RPG. And so the way our audience responded to that was interesting. But so I think niche, small, is better, and then you can maybe have multiple things going on. And for me, it's about not chasing the explosive growth. It's like, so RPG Site is a website that serves, you know, between, depending on how busy the month is, between like 2.5 and 5 million visitors a month. And that's decent sized. It's not like blow the doors off enormous. I'm not buying a Lamborghini anytime soon. But what we've had is, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6% growth every year, even the bad years, for a decade. And I am perfectly content with that. The issue is, of course, a lot of businesses, small or large, aren't content with that growth. They want to explode. That's business, right? But the problem is, in chasing the explosive growth, you have to be really proactive. You have to be really aggressive. And the problem with aggression in the SEO space is if Google changes its mind, you're fucked, basically. Like,
well, it's also seems very depressing. you know what I mean? Like, especially you come from a creative space. I mean, it feels like that's part of what's like, you know, seems like you found your way through it and you get some level of enjoyment from figuring out this part of the puzzle. But on some level, like any day that you're worried about where you stack on a ranking is a day that you're not thinking about what makes, like, what's something interesting to put on the site. But in the meta sense, if you can't make the ranking stuff work, well, then there's no site to put anything interesting on. And
well,
so
that's what I mean. We have a pretty good audience of dedicated RPG fans who come for the news and come for the reviews and stuff like that. But I make no bones, and I've said this, you know, I make no bones about this with the staff as well, where it's like, we publish a lot of content, not all of it, but we publish a lot of content that is in a way a loss leader. You know, it doesn't make the money back that we pay for that to be written. But the stuff that pays for that, obviously, is the stuff that's got a super long tail where you can get a nice position on something for a game that is, you know, really popular. And, you know, I know there's entire websites where they built an empire on Pokemon Go, right? On every single day updating all sorts of nonsense and important stuff, though, that matters to people. And that's because it can be easy to, and this was something that when we talked about RPG site and guides in general, something I was quite keen to impress when we spoke before was there can be an attitude towards guides that can be quite sniffy and like it's not, you know, you're not doing proper journalism or you're not doing proper criticism. You're just sort of, and I do think there's a lot of low hanging fruit guides. And I think that this actually is where AI will come in. It's like Roblox codes. That's like that sort of term is like a battleground, right? And where there's hundreds of websites all vying for that, or Wordle Solutions, another really good example. Although that sort of dropped off, but when Wordle was at its height, that was like the most important page that probably any website could do on that given day. And that stuff is lower hanging fruit and perhaps isn't as skilled, but there's so much guide stuff that is tremendously skilled. And some of the best writers I've ever worked with are guide specific people, and they perform Herculean feats of patience. I mean, that's one of the reasons why on RPG site we don't do certain types of guides, because I never feel comfortable asking people to do stuff that I wouldn't do, and the certain types of guides that just require such like dedication and kind of mind numbing but difficult at the same time, and I don't want to say to someone, can you do that? So we don't do those things, and so we make less money as a result. But that's an equation I'm happy with. But there's so many people who just do incredible, incredible work. And so it's not to sniff at guides, really. But I think it's absolutely fair to say that, while also making the observation that an environment has been created where there's loads of terrible stuff. There's loads of writers also being sort of exploited to create a lot of terrible stuff, or a lot of, you know, low rent stuff. And Google has created that problem. And now Google is trying to fix that problem, but by fixing it, they're just going to create an environment where loads of people lose their jobs. And it is depressing. And I don't fully see, as it stands now, like you said to me, where do you see things in 10 years? I know what my intention is, but I'm sort of, like I say, working in this smaller bubble. And it's a bubble designed to protect myself and protect the people who work with me and keep us ticking over. But in a grander sense, it's very, very difficult to see where things are even going to be in 6 months. Because depending on how quickly they push this AI stuff out, Google, obviously, it's all secret as well. So how quickly people can figure out if there's a loophole, where there's a loophole. But also, you know, Google has made stuff happen in the helpful content update, and it's moving around all the time. There's actually like websites dedicated to this where they track the grander search movements. So every single day, every single hour, you can go to, trying to think, I think SEMrush has one of these, where it's like a Richter scale thing. So it's almost like today, the earthquake of Google is this much. And if it jumps to like a 7 or an 8, then you know some serious stuff is going down. Uh-huh. And yes, you know, the bat signal goes up and all the SEOs descend. But it's when stuff's moving that frequently, it's impossible. And that's part of the problem, right? There is no stability, or there's very little stability. And
well, it's just what worries me is, you know, I've told the story on Remap before, like when we first started the company was, you know, I was in like the most privileged position possible, which is like, I'm this white guy who's been doing this for like a very long time and I know everybody. And I didn't have a single job offer after I lost my job. And like not even an interview, just a lot of like, well, that sucks, man. It's like, oh, okay. Well, usually that gets followed up with, and we'll go talk to the business people and we'll figure it out. And so, you know, if you use me as an example and then trickle down for how brutal the layoffs have been in the video game industry writ large, but also in, you know, for the purpose of this conversation, media in particular, I don't know, like people aren't finding chairs elsewhere. Like it used to be, they're like, okay, maybe you lost your job. Like a publication always implodes. Like a business model always implodes at some point. The business people come and always ruin it to some degree. But you know, like if you're in, like eventually there'll be somewhere else for you to settle down. And that just hasn't been the case. Like the jobs haven't shown up somewhere else. And you know, I think that extends all the way from editorial to guides writing. And like the squeeze is just on in so many different directions. And my worry is less so that someone like yourself can find a way to make your website work because you seem to understand scale and like aren't interested in explosive growth. But for like all the people caught up in other places where those do become concerns, it just feels like more people are just going to lose their jobs. And if your desire is to stay in media, to like be a creative and be writing, I just don't know where... I don't know where that money's coming from. It just seems like more and more of it's going away. And I don't see where more is coming in. And funny enough, it seems to follow the same track that you were mentioning before, like where Google is optimizing towards expertise and niches. And it's like, well, I mean, Remap is a niche. Like we, yes, we're like probably much bigger than RPG site, but we're not like, our member count is not huge, right? Yeah. Like, and like, people like we charge enough that it's able to pay everyone's bills. It's been successful beyond my wildest expectations and dreams. Like I'm very thankful, but like the numbers are pretty like small, like, but it's because we have us like a very passionate, dedicated, interested audience. And then when we asked for their help, they said, yeah, like we want you to keep doing this. Here's money to keep doing it. But it seems like that tracks along that sort of like expertise niche route as opposed to being a generalist and like appealing to everybody and then getting caught up in the muck.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's to what you said as well about, you know, when you lost your job and finding that there wasn't places you could go to, part of that, right, is does it not feel like to you that there's been a slowing of new outlets popping up, of new investment? Like, you know, we're not in a world where, God, we're probably 10 years removed from Polygon starting up now, right, for instance, and there are new sites, but ironically, this is one of the things that really sucks about some of the stuff that's been going on, is that it feels like a lot of quite decent new up-and-coming sites that aren't just click farms have been hurt quite a bit by the helpful content update. I think because they don't have that authoritativeness for the EEAT or the trustworthiness, because they haven't existed for that long. A huge advantage for RPG site is that we've got a domain name that's
right,
you know, pushing 20 years old. And so that's an issue. And I think about people, think about friends of mine, Andy on Video Games Chronicle. He has had to work tremendously hard to make a traditional video game news site work in this current. And I'm amazed that he has made it work. Like I have so much respect for the fact that he's actually managed to make that work. Cause when he was doing it, I remember him telling me he was doing it and saying to him, I really hope it works, but it's such a hard market. Like,
good luck.
Yeah, it's such, and obviously he had a lot of experience and he had some great backing and stuff, to be fair. And all that stuff obviously helps. But when I think of like in the last couple of years, relatively decently sized video game websites that have been set up, VGC is probably one of the only ones. And obviously right, you
and
guys.
And the other trend is just is folks like myself who like got lucky to become reasonably well known in sort of established, like like semi stable jobs, and then was able to have an audience that was like, hey, I got to go do something else unless you're willing to like pay for me to keep doing what I'm doing. But like it requires you, like that's me like cashing in on 20 years of these jobs. And if you're just getting started, like there's like, you haven't built an audience. You haven't built like people you could call fans. And so like, I think most of the trend has not been new places popping up. It's been existing folks that otherwise would go behind the scenes to work in development or communications, PR, however you want to characterize it. Mm-hmm. And instead using places like Patreon or Memberful, like different funding services that like allow you to keep doing what you're doing separate from like having to do it at a corporation that's going to ask you to have exponential growth. I mean, that was the true of Waypoint was like, I remember being in a meeting and they're like, so you're very profitable. Like we're very happy. Things are great. How do we like double the users? And it's like, I can't. Like, that's it. Like, I mean, I can juice it. You know, I mean, like there are things we can do. We could probably come up with stunts and ways to like get more people to convert, yada, yada. But I was like, we're talking hundreds, thousands, like at most, if it's all very successful, it's not double and it's not triple. And they're like, huh, that's interesting. And by interesting, I mean, we're going to take your job away because.
Well, like, yeah, I mean, and but that's the thing. And it's like, so what could you have done? And one of the answers for the past 10 years has been you just start playing the game and do the most cynical stuff for Google and for search you can possibly do. But what's interesting slash scary slash cool is that the stuff that Google's doing suggests that potentially that isn't going to work anymore, which is really dangerous for the people who are doing that. But also it becomes this weird thing of Google's chosen few. So like, well, yeah, we talked about Discover, and I think an interesting thing that's developing on Discover with the recent changes that, again, I recommend Lily Ray's account because she's sort of following this very closely, is that there are certain brands and outlets that are doing enormously well out of Discover. So like, I think Lily tweeted the other day, like, she opened Discover on her phone and 5 of the 7 stories on her Discover front page were all from Yahoo. And there are also some publishers in games that are having similar uplifts in that way. And the danger of that, obviously, is that then it becomes a weird haves and have-nots thing, whereas at least before with Discover, it felt like everybody had a relatively even chance. And yes, the big publishers would do better and people who were willing to optimize for Discover might do better, but everyone got a bit. What we've seen is a lot of people dropping to zero, and the people who haven't dropped to zero now getting tremendous exposure. And I guess that brings us to almost the real nub of all of this, which is that it's no good for so much of the internet media ecosystem to basically hinge on the whims of one company. And one team within one company, in a sense, where literally, you know, the search team, it's not an exaggeration to say, obviously they have stuff in place to prevent stuff like this, but the search team could change an election, leave alone kill a video game website. And so that's the problem. But also Google's huge, not going anywhere. Like traffic from like Bing and DuckDuckGo and things like that exists, but it's a drop in the ocean, right?
Right.
And
you can't build a business around it.
No. And so at that point the option becomes subscription models like what you guys are doing, or it's to build audiences, build organic audiences, which is probably the best option. And to be fair, that's what you've done. You've built an organic audience, but then obviously you're monetizing it via the subscription rather than via the ads. I think sometimes potentially a hybrid model is the thing that I think will become most common in the future.
Yeah.
To be honest, it's something we've looked at. We've done user polls and had like, you know, 5,000-6,000 people answer and been happy to see like 60% of people say they would pay a sub to not have any ads.
I think it's like you like having an institutional website, which I would describe RPG site as being like the kinds of people that are coming there are coming that like they're choosing to come to your website. So yeah. I'm sure you're getting some people that are like coming through Google, but you have some sort of like foundational.
We've got a
people,
decent
which, like,
direct.
It's a community, right? Like, and like they go there because they want to be around those groups of people with shared interests. And at least, you know, in my experience, I've been pleasantly surprised both times that I have engaged on this, like that more people than you would think are willing. The kinds of people coming to an RPG site, the kinds of people coming to a Waypoint or a Remap, like they know the score, right? Yes. Like they understand the media ecosystem. And so they also understand if they want it to exist that like they're willing to invest their dollars to make that happen. And like what the scale of that is going to be different. But my guess is you'd be pleasantly surprised by how many people were interested and be like, this would make a lot more sense if on some level, like you had this more or less stable income from, you know, the community that was separate from the whims of the ad market.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, when you said about where do you see it in 10 years, I hope that that continues. And, you know, if things get tougher on the ad side, we can look at doing a sub model or whatever. I think if you've got a website where it's more like you are more reliant on serving the person who hears in the pub that GTA 6 trailer is coming out and goes on their phone and just Googles it, or the teenager who just wants to know when like Peter Griffin is coming out in Fortnite, like those are, and right now those are huge businesses. And I think what people don't realize a lot of the time, the more general audience, as we discussed, as you said at the very, very start, is how much of games websites they probably read and love and adore for completely different types of content are nevertheless hugely reliant on that stuff. Even if it's hidden from the front page, you know, a lot of websites do that, right? Like a lot of websites just legitimately straight up do all that stuff, but just bury it.
Well, I think it's rare for someone to go to IGN.com, to use an example, and it's like, I'm here to go find a guide. And it's like, you go to IGN.com, like you type in IGN.com because like you want to see the news or the features or the previews or whatever. But the guide just, you stumble upon because IGN, you know, has a lot of expertise in making sure that they are like highly ranked. And so you kind of come across IGN.
And also
by
they're huge, right? Because it's size, not only in terms of traffic, but in terms of, you know, their wiki is enormous and just impossible to, it's like for a site like RPG site, if it's a super RPG site niche game, if it's something like Octopath Traveler 2 or something like that, something I always say to the guys, it's like, if we can get 2 and above us is IGN, I will be ecstatic. Because we're not going to get above them, apart from in exceptional circumstances. But yeah, it's funny because like we in the media also are so insular and inward looking. So it's like, how important is Twitter to games media, or was it before it all started to go horribly wrong? But like, it was the center of all our universes, right? To some degree, at least
important for building an audience. Zero importance for driving traffic.
Well, that's what I mean, right?
How I'd explain it.
It was so important, and yet for most websites, it was probably 5% of traffic or less.
If you were lucky. I mean, just people did not click through. You could have an extremely viral tweet with a link attached, and it will drive you like basically no traffic.
Yeah, now it's down to nothing. But and that's the same example, right? It's a big company that, you know, Elon comes in and says, we want to remove the useful link cards and stuff like that. And it's drove that even lower. And Google's just doing this, just toying with, you know, these livelihoods on a whim. But like I say, I can't stress enough that I absolutely understand that they are trying to do the right thing. And I just think much as with most media, we've sort of backed ourselves into this horrible, horrible corner across the board. Google, media, the way people consume media now and the way they think about media now, where I feel like it's been massively devalued compared to even 10 years ago. I think about the way the attitude that people have towards video game guides when we were doing UFF9 and doing Final Fantasy 9 and 10 guides and, you know, game facts in those days and stuff like that, versus the attitude that users have towards guides and stuff now. Everything is much more disposable. As a result, I feel like it's only now that people are raising the alarm when some people are being quite seriously damaged by the helpful content update and by the AI stuff. But actually, this is just, this is not the thin end of the wedge. The wedge has been going in for a while now.
Agreed. Well, what a fun way to end this conversation. You were supposed to be the optimist, Alex.
I do think it will work out. That's the thing. I do think.
Well, can't go away. Games are too. It's just, I think part of what we struggle with is like for the young people, like, you know, your 20 somethings getting into this, like they'll be like along for the ride as like the models figure themselves out where you fit into that ecosystem. It's, you know, folks that are in their late 20s, 30s, 40s, like planning for families, like have more obligations in their life. That instability is really stressful.
Yeah.
And like, it's why so many people leave, is because, well, these other places are stressful, but they're less stressful than this one.
Yeah. And we have a serious like talent retention problem, right? Like older people who are in this industry and still reporting on and still games critics and stuff like that are very few and far between, because ultimately a lot of people in the end want more stability and, let's be honest, in a lot of cases, more money, although the money situation is a lot better over there than it is in Europe. But I do believe that everything will be all right in the end. I think that probably the most likely thing is a lot of stuff like this is cyclical. And I think it's probably likely we do have a bit of a horrible crash and we do lose some websites, some we lose people as a result of losing websites. And then things will gradually right themselves and grow again. That's what I imagine. It's not what I want to happen. And I think all the big websites will come through it just fine. I actually think that's the saddest thing of all is I think most in danger is that middle ground, because the middle is always what gets squeezed, right? Like if you're a big brand and you've got multiple websites under your belt, or you're a huge, huge behemoth like an IGN, you're fine. But I do think it will be okay in the end, but I do think it's extremely, I think next year is going to be all over the place. I genuinely do. But you know, I live for the chaos to some degree.
Well, depending on how that chaos goes, we'll have to have you come back through again and we can talk through it. But Alex, I've sincerely appreciated all your time. People won't know this on the call because it'll just sound normal and not chopped up. But Alex has been very patient while I've had some people coming through to clean my chimney, like knocking on the door. I've been like muting my mic as like a giant vacuum goes like, and just, you know. So know that Alex has been extremely patient while I've stopped and started a conversation multiple times.
No, it's been my pleasure. It's been my pleasure.
Alex, where can people find you? Where should they, obviously RPG site, but where else can people track?
Yeah, I'm at AP Zone Runner. That's like Alpha, Papa, and then the word zone, like a Sonic zone, and the word runner, like a marathon runner. That's actually a Sonic thing. I'm ashamed to admit, but that is from,
that
is from the UK Sonic comic. But yeah, so I'm AP Zone Runner on Twitter, or X or whatever. In fact, I'm that pretty much everywhere. You can find me on RPG site. Please visit rpgsite.net at RPG site on Twitter. And I also quite regularly write on VG247, where I sort of like, I'm like a weird editor at large there, where I just drop off, you know, I do features on a regular basis and stuff like that. So if you want my thoughts on non role playing games and more general industry stuff, you can find me on VG247.com. But yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming through. And obviously, you know, you can support everything we do by going to remapradio.com. You can, you know, at a very base level, you know, even if you don't have the money to sign up, just, you know, go review a podcast or other ways you can like help websites, like help communities. Yes. Like, it's like simple stuff like that. Like, you know, like just reviewing, like the Apple algorithm is very important as well. And so just leaving a review, even if you can't actually sort of financially support, all that stuff helps places like RPG site, places like Remap. But thanks everyone for listening, and as always, fuck capitalism, go home.